All right. Welcome to yet another brand new, awesome episode of the Comedy Nerds. My name is Dan McInerney.
I'm Dustin Diodato.
We're two New York-based comedians. We're also comedy nerds.
Yes,
we
are.
As the title would suggest, we love comedy, love talking about comedy. We're here to talk to you about it right now. And we're reporting from a hell of a heat wave here in New York. It is sweltering. And perhaps in other parts of the country, because I know in the places like Phoenix, like it's 115 degrees right now. I just don't think you can quite understand the uncomfortableness of just the humidity. It has gone back and forth between pouring rain and being bright and sunny about four or five times today. And you cannot step outside without just being absolutely drenched in sweat. It's miserable, man. It's so miserable.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody yesterday about that, saying I totally get why the third world countries are third world countries. Because they're all the third world countries are like the really hot ones.
Yeah.
So it's like, look, I'm going to build shelter, I'm going to get food, and then I'm not going to move.
Yeah, I'm just going to lay here.
Yeah.
And it just makes people crazy. I mean, I've actually of the opinion that that's part of the reason why people are so crazy in New York is a big part of the weather. Because it's either swelteringly hot or it is freezing cold. Because even places like Chicago, it's really cold, but then like in the summer, it's nice. Like it's never nice in New York.
No.
It's always either freezing cold, and there's like a 2-week period in between summer and winter where it's like kind of nice.
Yeah.
And people walk in the park, and it's great. And then it's swelteringly hot, and then there's another 2-week period, and then it's freezing cold. But that is not about comedy.
No.
Dustin, how did we get on that topic?
You.
I know.
I had nothing to do with that.
Because I'm the bad host.
Yeah, no, we've established.
you have to reel me back in. So I wanted to talk today about personal experiences with comedy.
Okay.
And I'll start, and maybe while I'm telling my story, you'll sort of see what I'm talking about, and you can have an anecdote or story as well. Or not. Or maybe you'll be like, I got nothing. And then I'll be like, well, that was a bad idea for a show. So comedy is awesome. And I'm a big fan of it. And but it's not just... Comedy has affected me in my life on a personal level. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. When I was a kid, I was really... I was a wimp, man. I was scared of everything. And I was genuinely scared of things like ghosts and monsters. Like, I honestly... And then I was scared, like, if there was, like, a horror movie on TV, like, I couldn't watch it. Like, we watched the first Thriller, the Michael Jackson video. First time it was on MTV, I was at my grandparents' house watching it. And when he transformed into, like, the cat creature, I screamed and hid under my grandmother's bed and refused to come out. And this wasn't, like, something that was particularly scary. This was the Thriller video. So I was really... I was just, like, a wimp, and I was scared of everything. And then one day, I saw Ghostbusters. And it would seem like Ghostbusters is a movie about ghosts and monsters and stuff. But Bill Murray's reaction to everything that was happening in the movie was, like, totally life-changing to me. Because there's all this scary ghosts and monsters and stuff happening, and he's totally nonchalant about it the whole time throughout the movie. You know, all right, she's a dog. You know, just like no matter what happened. And that was when I fell in love with Bill Murray, first of all. But second of all, also just kind of showed me that, like, you know, these things can't really hurt you. Or they can hurt you, but if you're not, you know, you make it worse by being so scared of certain things.
So what you're saying is
that
in the event of a ghost attack, that as long as you remain snarky about it,
right,
you're fine.
Well, not that you're fine. I'm just saying that
ghosts are repelled by by positive energy and sarcasm.
All right.
What you're saying.
Obviously,
that's the lesson you learned.
Obviously, as I got a little older, I came to understand that there was no such thing as ghosts and monsters and stuff.
You didn't come to know it.
But
you came to believe it. You don't know.
Speaking of that, there was one time I saw an awesome interview with Dan Aykroyd where somebody was just like, you know, how do you explain to your kids or whatever, do your kids believe in ghosts or something? They ask you about ghosts. And instead of saying like, no, I just explained there's no such thing. Like basically his answer was like, I sent my kids down and I'm like, listen, ghosts are real. And, you know, just you have, you know, as long as you like protect yourself and you don't do, you know, certain things to like, or basically he was talking about ghosts, like as though they were bees. Like if you don't bother them, they won't bother you. Like, and I was just like, what? Like that was his answer. Like I tell my kids, like, just don't bother ghosts. If you see one, they won't bother you. And that was his answer. And I kept waiting for the punchline and there was none. So apparently Dan Aykroyd thinks ghosts are real. Okay. So anyway, but so that, and that really, honestly, no joke, I'm not kidding, seeing that movie had a real effect on my life, where I learned, you know, if you don't worry about things so much, then part of the things that you're worried about, you know, you give them more power by worrying about them. And the fact that he was so cool under pressure, I thought, well, that's the way I want to be. I want to be cool under pressure and don't worry about it too much and never let him see you sweat,
mm-hmm.
no matter what. And that's actually something that I, you know, not only took away from that movie, but something I've really applied to my life. And that's my story about Ghostbusters.
Okay. I think for today's generation, not even today's generation, but I think another good example of that was Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Maybe.
Because they were always in situations where they were almost definitely going to die.
Right.
And then they didn't die. And then they made some sort of crazy comment about it that just showed that they were cool and up on pop culture.
They were cool. Yeah, well, they were up on pop culture. And they were, you know, and Buffy, you know, I was at a different point in my life when I was a fan of that show. But yeah, no, I mean, that was, I'm sure for a lot of girls, that, you know, was probably a big thing, that she was so cool and collected under pressure, and you know, also dating equals vampires. I don't know, there's a lot of illusions in the show.
I think I'm not gonna say my equivalent of that story, but my comedy affected my life version.
Okay.
My story traces back, I think, to the first time I performed in front of humans.
Okay.
There was no like performing in front of robots,
or, right?
You know, you were first time I performed
bits to like your stuffed animals.
Yeah. I was unpopular in high school.
Okay.
And when I say unpopular, I don't mean like there were some kids cooler and there were some kids less cool. I was like bottom three. You can go to my yearbook and I could count on one hand the number of kids that were less popular than I was.
All right.
Why? I don't really know. I sort of moved, you know, during a crucial time. And I mouthed off to the wrong people. And it was an uphill battle.
Mm.
Hence that I'm a comedy nerd now, because I had a plethora of time.
Right.
To think about things and be in my own little world. Anyway, nobody ever knew I was there, and I never had any confidence in myself. I just sort of hung out, tried to remain in the shadows.
Mm-hmm.
So one day there was a coffee house. Not a coffee house, but like a... one of those, it was in the school, and it was one of those things where you go up and you read your poetry, or you sing a little song, or whatever. And I had, in my creative writing class, written what was just a series of, like, 200 funny questions. And they weren't even necessarily funny. It was just, you know, like, what does M&M stand for? Why don't dogs ever... I don't remember. You know what I mean? Like, it was just a series of these ridiculous questions.
Sounds hilarious, though.
At the time, it was.
Okay.
And I went up and I was just like, you know what? It can't get any worse.
Right.
I'll go up and read these questions. Somebody had like seen them and thought it was humorous. And it killed.
Wow.
You know, like it, for whatever reason, everybody in that room who did not respect me at the beginning, which was everybody in that room, respected me at the end. Maybe not in a way that was like, hey, buddy, come to our party. But in a way that was like, I'm not going to hate you tomorrow.
Right.
So, you know, I realized that there was a power in that. That was not something that everybody could do. And when somebody saw you do it, then, you know, they developed a certain admiration for you. And it was a power that you had over these people. You know, that maybe they could play football or score with hot chicks, but they couldn't make a group of people laugh like that.
Mm.
So that was sort of the first time I realized I had that power in me, and started to gain, you know, more of a sense of, I guess, self-worth or whatever. You know, I mean, you know, everybody's got their own little psychological problems and things they need to do to convince themselves. But I think for most comedians, you know, I think they lean on their comedic ability to sort of give them a sense that, you know, well, that's what I offer. That's what I bring to the world. That's what I can do that you can't, because I'm probably super duper insecure and incapable of, you know, having human contact most of the time. But when I'm up there, you have to listen to me, you son of a bitch.
Right. And yeah, you know. No, there's a definite power there. No, that's great. I didn't have a similar experience, but it's something sort of like that.
No, Dan was on the football team. Dan was cool. Dan hung out with cheerleaders.
Definitely, no, I did not hang out with cheerleaders, and I definitely was not cool in any way. But I would say that I probably fell somewhere in the middle, let's say,
okay,
of the high school. Although, in elementary school and junior high, I probably was literally on the bottom of the social strata. Like, no joke. Like, I literally was at the bottom. And I did claw my way to the middle. I didn't claw my way. I didn't really care. But I just sort of floated to the middle for reasons like, yes, I played football. Fair enough.
Well, see, in elementary school, because I moved from 6th to 7th grade. In elementary school, I was the man. I was very popular.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is why it hurt that much more in 7th grade when everybody's like, oh, because we hate you.
Oh.
So that's why it particularly stung, because I had gone from being pretty cool to people throwing things at me.
Right. Well, the other thing was, like, the 6th, 7th, 8th grade. I was definitely on the bottom of that social ladder, and I you know, I was the kid who got beat up and stuff, and got picked on pretty heavily. But also, looking back now, I a little bit deserved it. I was kind of a prick.
I'm sure you,
like,
did. I'm sure you,
yeah,
did.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying,
I didn't,
like,
is the thing. I was really awesome.
All right, no.
Whereas you, probably, you were kind of a jerk.
Yeah, no, I was. Well, I'm not a jerk. I just was like, I was probably really obnoxious looking back. And then, but luckily, I was able to sort of take that obnoxiousness and kind of turn it a little bit. So, like, whereas, like, turn it a little bit sideways, maybe. So now I was, like, being funny instead of just being obnoxious, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I was sort of in the middle, and I had my group of friends, and we were, you know, we were in the drama club and in show choir. Two things that have never been associated with cool, just so we're clear on this. And yes, I did play football for a few years, but whatever. Not that I was ever a jock, or not that I ever hung out with those guys outside of, you know, playing football. But anyway, I remember it was one of the last days of school, and we were in the classroom, and I forget why, one of the really cool kids had come into my math classroom. And I forget how I got mentioned. Oh, I remember. He had a video camera because it was, like, the last day of school. And then he asked, like, hey, does anybody care that I'm filming them? And then he said, I know Dan doesn't care. And everybody, like, no one in my math class knew who I was. It was one of those weird, like, for whatever reason, I got stuck in this class with, like, a whole bunch of people I didn't know. And literally, I think people turned around and were like, oh, who, like, had never even realized I was in this class before. And I was like, oh, why doesn't, you know, they were like, why wouldn't he care? And he's like, oh, Dan's a, you know, he's a really great actor. And I was, first of all, I was just like, wait, A, you know who I am? What the hell was that? And second of all, like, you actually have an opinion, and apparently this is a positive opinion. But the other thing that was crazy, which I never realized, which you know, not that I had never heard that before, not that I'm bragging, but I'm just saying, like, I knew people were aware of that. But it also, there was clearly, like, a tinge in his voice, like, he was jealous? You know what I mean? And I was just like, what? Like, you know, I was like, you have it all. Like, you're one of the rich kids, you know, you have an awesome car, and you get all these hot girls, and, like, why would you ever, you know, care? Why would you ever be jealous of me because, you know, I was in the drama club and I had the lead in the play, and then, anyone would ever care. So a similar, sort of a similar thing where I was just like, wow, it's amazing, you know, especially when you're that age, you just sort of assume, like, you're so outward looking. It would never occur to you that someone would look at you and maybe be jealous of you. You know, you're so jealous of everyone else. So, you know, interesting. Anyway, my other sort of thing I was thinking about was I was an outcast in junior high. And then in high school, I was in the drama club, and I had all these friends and stuff. And one thing that united us was the state. State was a sketch comedy show on MTV, and we loved it. Love, love, loved it. And the thing that I loved was we had, there was this one sketch called Dan the Very Popular, I think it was like Dan the Very Popular Homosexual High School Student or something. And it was all this guy who was gay and just inexplicably was really popular in school. And there was one line where the coach screams, Dan, get your openly gay ass over here. And we would yell that to each other, like, from down the hall and stuff. And what was awesome is that other people were just like, what was that? And it was so great that we had, like, it was the first time I ever had, like, this personal joke. And I was just like, well, you guys aren't in it. You know, we have our own little clique and our own little jokes, and you don't understand it. So that was, you know, sort of the first time that I ever had that, and it was thanks to the state. And when we literally would memorize entire sketches and recite them back and forth to each other. Another thing I'd like to point out, not traditionally considered cool to do that. So I want to make that clear. Definitely not one of the cool kids. But yeah, but it was just awesome to have that for the first time, that feeling of like, you know, we have something in common, and we have our own little group here that, you know, and there's other people who are outside of that group. That was awesome.
Let me ask you about a particular phenomenon in that vein. Because I think part of the purpose of talking about this topic is sort of looking at it from the other side. A lot of times we've been talking about comedy from the outside of people who are observing it. And in this episode, we're talking about it more as comedians who are talking about the experience of actually being, you know, comedians and our influences. And one of the things that I found the weirdest was I'm not going to say as you gain in popularity, but as you develop an audience and stuff like that, and they come watch shows, people do latch on to certain things. People do appreciate things more than others. And I found that there was a period of time where people who I was friends with would come and they'd click over from being my friend to a fan of the show that I had done. And start quoting stuff back and remembering things that I didn't even remember. And in some weird way, it was like the worst possible thing they could do. Like, you would think that it would be a positive because they respected what you were doing. But there's this bizarre phenomenon, I think, when you're a comedian, and I mean this in the nicest possible way, where you want everybody to appreciate what you're doing, but when you find out that they do, you lose respect for them. Is that just me? I guess what I mean is, like, when somebody's like, wow, you were really funny. That thing that you wrote was really funny. I guess maybe it's just me, but I've spoken to, of the two of us, maybe it's just me, but I've spoken to a bunch of other comedians, and there's that sense of, like, you're that affected by what I did? Like, really? Don't you have a life? Don't you have, like, a thing that you go back to? Like, are you... You really care that much about that stupid thing that I thought of at 2 in the morning when, you know, whatever. It's a bizarre thing where I imagine it, when you have, like, thousands upon thousands of fans, you appreciate them, but you almost want to keep your distance from them because if they appreciate it that much, there must be something, like, wrong. Even though I'm a fan of things and I don't think that, I don't know, I don't.
Is that
a phenomenon that has ever happened to you, or am I just a jerk?
No, I mean, I can't say, like, if someone's a fan of something I've done that I don't know if I'd say I lose respect for them. I may find it confounding, especially because, again, it was just like, you know, oh, that was so funny. It's like, oh, really? I had, like, 7 minutes I had to think of something, and that was just, like, kind of the first thing I thought of. It wasn't really that big of a deal. And also, the thing that kills me, and this happens all the time, is the sketch that I spend 2 weeks grinding away on and writing like 7 drafts of and blah blah blah, that is a sketch that always, first of all, usually doesn't even make it to the stage because it, you know, within my group it doesn't go anywhere, it just kind of dies. And the sketch that I just kind of like, oh, I have an idea, and I just sit down and just type it up, that's the one that always kills, and that honestly bugs the crap out of me because it's like, why do I even bother? I should literally just type up crap and just submit it, and then that's going to be the thing that hits. Because
okay, well, 2 things about that.
Yeah.
First off, I just want to make a correction from before. Is that I'm not saying I don't respect my fans.
Right.
Because I want to keep some.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say I don't respect you. It's just weird for me to respond to somebody appreciating things that I do.
Right. No, I understand.
So please don't be insulted if you've come to a show, said something nice, and, you know, think, right, like, oh, that guy doesn't appreciate it, I hate him. I do appreciate it.
They've already turned off the show and before the disclaimer, and now they just hate you.
Okay, well,
they were just like, screw Dustin, I'm not listening to this show anymore, and they turned it off.
So the second thing,
yes,
is maybe it's not that you can just write any old crap and people will laugh at it. Maybe it's just that your gut is funnier than your brain.
No, it is. I know. But it still bugs the crap out of me. No, I understand. I mean, I can't just sit down and just type random words. But, I mean, it just kills me that it's like, I don't know. Like, it just feels like, to me, it's like I'm a writer, and a writer writes. And I should be able to write my way out of something. Like, if I get stuck in the middle of a sketch, it's my job to be able to figure it out. And the truth of the matter is that apparently that's not really true. Sometimes if I get stuck, it's probably best if I just forget about it. Maybe even walk away. And you know what? Maybe even walk away and come back to it later. But maybe you just need to walk away from it for a while. And like, it's taken me about a decade to accept that fact. That I can't, you know, just through sheer force of will, force something to be good. Like, I have to... sometimes you just have to walk away from it. And sometimes the thing that you think of at 2 o'clock in the morning when you're kind of drunk and you write on the back of a napkin, that, you know, might be the best idea you ever had. And you just need to accept that fact. It's a hard fact to accept, but sometimes it happens.
Let's talk also, I mean, we've talked about the positive effects the comedy has had.
All right.
What about the negatives?
The negatives?
Yeah. I think every person who's done comedy has occasionally had a period of time going like, wow, I should never do this again.
Yeah, I mean, except for the sheer amount of time I've probably wasted when I could have been out making money or, I don't know, curing cancer or something. I don't know. I can't really... I don't know if there's any negatives. Well, you know, it's funny. We've sort of learned something about ourselves where you said something last time about, like, I wish I wasn't a comedy nerd, but it's something I felt sort of stuck with. And I don't feel that way. Mm-hmm. I love comedy. And, like, you know, I'll admit, you know, I waste a lot of time or, you know, perhaps it cost me some cool points along the way. But, you know, I mean, I love this stuff. Oh, I don't feel like I'm... I was like, no, I'm not attacking you. I mean, there's things in my life where... you know, things that I've become obsessed with or whatever, and I kind of, you know, wish, like, oh, I wish I could get away from it, but I can't. But, I mean, comedy, I can't say I really feel that way. I mean, I really, you know, I don't know. It's just been the thing that I've always loved. And this is a topic for another show, but I've also wondered if maybe, because a lot of times you'll hear comedians will, like, kind of tell stories of how they get started, and a lot of times they'll be like, oh, I didn't know anything about comedy, and I just, you know, whatever, right? Somebody pushed me on stage one day and I did 5 minutes and people seemed to like it and I sort of left. And I sort of wonder, like, maybe that's something that's holding me back, is that I have all this knowledge, that I've studied comedy, that I loved it so much as a kid. Maybe I wasn't able to sort of jump in with a fresh, you know, look to it. That I was sort of thinking like, oh, well, you know, I can't do this bit. George Carlin did something like this. Oh, this reminds me of, you know... oh, maybe I'll try to do something like this guy did once. And I have all this, like, encyclopedic knowledge. Maybe that actually was holding me back, as opposed to if I just sort of, like, knew nothing about it and I just picked up a mic and just started talking, you know, maybe that would have been better than, you know, than sitting there and sort of studying it from every angle. You know, maybe I was too clinical about it.
See, that's a negative.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. You said you didn't have one.
Well, then I thought of one. It took me a second. I'm sorry.
Okay.
What about you? Negatives for you?
I don't know. I mean, I brought it up with the hope that you would have one.
Well, I just had one.
No, I know. You did. And I thought maybe while you were saying it, I would think of one. But I don't know that I particularly have a negative. It's just, you know, I'm a sketch, stand-up, and improv performer.
Right.
And sketch is almost always going to hit, you know. You'll have mediocre... or good nights, but usually don't have a death night.
Right.
Whereas stand-up, sometimes a show can rock your world.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes a show where you can just be like, oh, I don't get it at all.
Right.
You know, and because I'm not at the level of a, you know, of a serious professional stand-up comedian, it's easy to let that affect me for a long period of time. So the stand-up aspect, I think more so than for almost any other performer, I'm assuming, is probably one of the hardest things to do because A, you're alone, and B, you get intense, immediate feedback, and you have to live with that until your next show.
Right.
You know, and it's one of those things where you can build up confidence and build up confidence, and then it's all gone. You know, and even for, I mean, every major comedian out there will tell you, no matter how successful they are now, they will still occasionally go out there and eat it.
Yeah.
And the people totally just won't. Bound. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, I thought I was done with that. It's like, I don't know, like, I play golf sometimes. And I've been playing since I was probably 14. And I'm, you know, 22. No. I'm in my early 30s now. And every once in a while, I'll just miss the ball. And I'm just like, wow, really?
Yeah.
Like, I swung a club like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and too many hundreds of times. And I just missed the ball completely.
Right.
But fortunately in golf, there it is again.
Yeah.
You can hit it again. And with stand-up, yeah, I mean, there'll be a next show. But unless you're, you know, a touring comic, it might not be right away. So you might have a couple of days of just sitting there stewing in it.
Right. I mean, I had a similar experience. We talked about this during the improv show. But I had a dark period in my improv where I was just like, I felt like I hadn't done anything different. And yet, for whatever reason, like, it wasn't working anymore. Mm-hmm. And it took me a while. I don't know what, I mean, I sort of know what the answer is, but sort of like golf where it's like, well, I'll work on my swing and, you know, I'll do this, that, the other thing. And then, like, part of it is that. And also part of it is just, like, mysteriously, like, all of a sudden you get your game back.
Yeah.
And there, you know, and I think we kind of tell ourselves like, oh, I changed my swing. Oh, and you kind of need to tell yourself that because honestly, it just happens.
No idea.
It just comes and goes and there's no real rhyme or reason to it, you know. And I mean, I think it's the same thing with, you know, I mean, although it does happen rarely in sketch, I have had a few deadly, deadly shows.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that kills me is just the fact that it's like, but I've done this sketch before. And it destroyed.
Yeah.
It brought the house down. So how come this time, like maybe I was a little tired. Maybe I wasn't quite as into it. Fine. But I can accept, you know, a few less laughs or the audience isn't quite into it. As opposed to like literally from like 100 to 0. Like there's no way that like that, you know, there's that much disparity. Why? Why does that happen? And I don't know. There's really no answer to it. There's no, you know, it's just this mystery of like why. Why does that happen? I don't know. And it's really frustrating. It's really hard. But, yeah, I don't know.
It's funny. I like to think of stand-up comedy. I like to think of being a comedian. Or, I mean, really a performer in general, but I'm going to say comedian because we're a comedy podcast.
Right.
As freshman bio for the majority of your life.
You know,
'cause freshman bio is a class that schools in general create, and they go, look, hey, you want to be a doctor? Well, we're going to give you the hardest class you're ever going to take.
Right.
And go, and like, hey, try and pass it, even though you've never been in college before. Good luck.
Yeah.
And fortunately for kids in medical school, or kids in college, freshman bio ends after a year. Whereas for comedians, freshman bio just keeps on going.
Right.
And there's so much. So I think even earlier when you're talking about comedians who just like got up there and were like, hey, you know, you're funny. And the person does 5 minutes. That they kill that first 5 minutes. But I guarantee you, if you ask them, the next like 30 shows were awful.
Right.
They were like painful, ridiculous. And then there were a couple good ones and then a whole series of awful.
Right.
And I think when that one thing that Seinfeld said in Comedian, the story that he told, shows that perhaps he gets it more than anybody I've ever heard.
That great, about the Glenn Miller band or whatever?
Yeah.
God, that is such a great story. When I heard that, I was just like, Yes, that sums everything up. Why don't you go ahead and tell it so the audience knows what we're talking
about? No, go ahead, do it.
No, I want you to tell it.
I don't remember the details as much as just it was, I believe they were going to try and fly, and there was a snowstorm, and then they took the bus, and it was a band.
Well, I think what happened, I mean, of course, this story probably didn't actually happen. Yeah. But I think according to the story is that they're flying on a small plane, and there's a bad snowstorm, and they have to land in a field. Because they can't fly anymore.
Oh, that's what it was? Okay.
So everybody gets out, and, you know, they're a big band or whatever.
And it's like Christmas.
Yeah, it's like Christmas Eve. It's a blizzard, and all these guys are carrying their gigantic heavy instruments. You know, a guy's got, like, a cello. One guy's got, like, a tuba and stuff. Carrying their big heavy instruments through this blizzard on Christmas Eve. And they're walking through this field, and they walk past the farmhouse. And in the farmhouse, they see the husband and the wife and the two kids, and they're huddled around the fire, and they're warm and they're safe, and they're opening presents, and it's Christmas, and it's like this idyllic, you know, picture. And the two musicians are standing outside holding their really heavy instruments, shivering to death in the freezing cold on Christmas Eve. And they look in the window, and one musician turns to the other and goes, "How do people live like this?" Yeah. And that sums up show business perfectly.
If you don't get what that story means, don't try and do comedy.
Yeah.
Try and be a performer.
Right. I mean, I think, to me, the point of that story is, like, you don't have a choice.
No.
Basically. Like, this is kind of something you have
yeah.
to do. You know, whether you want to or not, which I guess is what you were saying.
Yeah.
You had said before, and I guess I do agree with you to that extent, where it's just like, I mean, it's something I love, but even if I didn't, I would still have to do it. Like, there's just something inside of me
yeah.
that, you know, I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm like, I got a great idea for a sketch. And I have to write it down. I have to, you know, maybe not that moment, but I write it down on a piece of paper and I have to sit down on my computer and type that up. Mm-hmm. And even if I didn't have a sketch group, and even if I, you know, worked in a steel mill, I would still write those sketches up and print them out and staple them and put them in a pile because I would just have to do it, you know?
And I think that's where, you know, when you look out if you're in New York or if you're in your own communities, wherever you are, you'll turn around and you'll see that there's a bunch of comedians, maybe, you know, in your local area, that are doing the stand-up scene or doing improv or doing whatever. And there are so many people and there are so few actually successful comedians, and it's one of those things where everybody starts out thinking that they have that mentality
right.
of, you know, well, you know, I do it because I have to, and then freshman bio kicks in and you're just like, wow, this is not worth it, and all of those people go away,
yeah,
and then you're left with, you know, a group of people, half who will never make it anyway because they're not that funny, and half who are on your TV.
You know, we've talked before about how much of it is luck. And we've said, you know, I don't think we said this on the show. I think we talked off mic. But just, you know, you could be the funniest guy in the world. And, you know, Lorne Michaels could be sitting in the audience. And he could go, oh, my God, this guy is hilarious. He'd be perfect for Saturday Night Live. Too bad I don't need a cast member this year.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, you know, I've often said, you know, maybe you were born to be the world's greatest airline pilot. Unfortunately, you were born in, like, 1742. And it's just like, you know, you just weren't, you know. So, I mean, you could even be hilarious, but maybe the kind of stuff you're doing just isn't in vogue at the time. Or, you know, you're ahead of your time or whatever. You know, it's just, it's so much of it is luck that it's just, like, almost not really worth beating yourself up about it. Because, you know. Whatever. You didn't make the right friend somewhere along the way, or you took a wrong turn. You know, you didn't do a certain show and you missed your opportunity, and that's all there is to it, because...
All right, I think we're almost out of time.
Yes.
But I want to ask you one theoretical question before we go.
Okay.
I was reading an article in a magazine that I have recently, and it was about a psychologist who was studying chess players.
Okay.
And part of his study was he took the best chess players in the world and the best chess prodigies and stuff like that and studied them over a period of time and discovered that there was a very specific part of their brain that they used when playing chess. And it showed that they used a large percentage of their long-term memory and a small percentage of their short-term memory, so they could hold strategies in their mind and stuff like that.
Okay.
And they determined that that ratio doesn't change over your life. It's not something that you can train up to.
Right.
You either just have it or you don't.
Or you don't.
And he's expanding that to all other, to a bunch of other things. He's studying athletes, you know, teachers and stuff like that.
Fair enough.
Now, if he could do that for comedians and determine if you were ever going to be a successful comedian just by giving you a DNA test and then you got a result back that said you will make it or you won't.
Right.
Would you take that test?
Would I take the test? Man, I don't know. That's a good question. Because I'm afraid I already know the answer, which is no. That's the thing. And it's like, do I really want to know that? Or maybe I do want to know. I think in a way I'd almost be afraid to take the test, and then the answer comes back, yes. If you keep going, at some point you'll definitely make it. Because then I'd have to keep going. Like, I couldn't quit. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, if it was like, no, you'll never make it, I was like, well, I'll just kind of, you know, fart around for a few years and have a grand old time. And then I'll, you know, then I'll quit and I'll whatever. You know, I'll get a middle management job somewhere, you know, and I'll just live the rest of my life. But yeah, I think in a way I'd almost be more afraid the answer would come back yes. But maybe I'll be like Phil Hartman and I'll make it when I'm like 48. Mm-hmm. And it's like, great, I have another like 18 years to go before I get there, you know, working crappy jobs and, you know, whatever, like having to do it all myself, having to book the space and, you know, write and make the CD. And God, that's such a pain in the ass. Like, that's the part that just kills me. Like, I just wish we had one roadie just to take care of all that work. That'd be great. But, yeah, I don't know. What about you?
I don't think that I would take it either.
No.
I think, because I think part of it is the dream. You know, maybe you make it and maybe you don't. But the part of it is just a fantasy. Part of it is just going out there and having fun. Because it doesn't really matter if a million people are watching you.
Right.
Or they're not. And I think especially for comedians, like, they're either doing it in front of a small group of people or on TV. And it's about the interpersonal touch more so than, you know. I mean, yeah, it's awesome if you could fill up, like, the garden, like, you know, Dan Cook's crazy special or whatever, or any of those, like, cosplay and all that. And that's awesome. But it's also just as awesome. Maybe not just as awesome, but it's pretty awesome just to do it in front of, like, 40 or 50 people who are all super-duper in sync with you.
Right.
And knowing that you're never going to make it, I think, or knowing that you weren't necessarily, like, born to do it, I don't know that I need that. The only thing that might be good about it is it would take some of the pressure off and you'd just be able to go, well, you know, I'm never going to make it, but I can just have fun and and stop striving for being on Conan.
Well, a very thought-provoking question, and I actually have a lot more to say about it, but we're probably going to have to wait for another show because we are out of time. So I am Dan McInerney.
And I'm Des Diodato.
You've been listening to The Comedy Nerds. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Been listening to The Comedy Nerds. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns you would like us to address, please contact the show at info@thecomedynerds.com. That's info@thecomedynerds.com. Also, be sure to visit us on the web at thecomedynerds.com. Our theme music is by the Santa Marias, and you can find them online at santamariasnyc.com. If you like what you heard here today, won't you please write a review in iTunes and tell all your friends about the show. And if you didn't like what you heard, you can write reviews on iTunes. I don't know where you got that crazy idea. I'm Dan McInerney, and for Dustin and myself, thanks for listening.